The title of this is From Sugar Pills to Photons. I guarantee we will go those places, though you might not expect how. I've spent a lot of time teaching and doing mental health practice in primary care medical settings. So this, for me, is something of an update and a vision. My work has been largely with family physicians, and it's indeed they who provide the largest portion of mental health services in our current system. Now, healthcare seems always a dance between the power of techniques and pills and the power of caring. However, with the marketing of medicines, our belief in quick fixes, plus the ascendancy of insurance and of corporate healthcare, it seems more conflict than collaboration. However, the last few years, the industrial engineers, are getting together with the doctors and nurses. 3D simulations of rooms, consultations on improving outcomes, and even engineering analysis, as well as looking into stress among caregivers in primary care, which, unfortunately, those caregivers have work tasks that are even ever more fragmented. So I look at the situation in primary care, and it's kind of like the kids' old game, Where's Waldo? Except this is, where's the relationship? As our good-hearted primary care folks, nurses, physicians, and others, vanish into their computer screens and checkboxes while compelled to serve as their own typists and billing staff. So it was with enthusiasm and mission that I replied to an invite by a like-minded colleague to talk to those engineers and physicians about relationships. And where that talk ended is where I'll start today. But looking back some 50 years to Jerome Frank's cross-cultural book on diverse therapies, Persuasion and Healing, from which today's reading is drawn. The components of healing that he found across cultures and times in medical and non-medical settings bring us right into the present world and into the world of the sacred mystery of relationships and the power of healing connections that align, connect, enlighten, inspire. It has been my hunch and hypothesis for some years that all the wondrous aspects of healthcare, researched and billed to the tune of billions of dollars each year, depend in significant part on the connection, the mind, the spirit, the mentor, and that any drug works best, any procedure works best when it is synchronized with the matrix of one's own healing. And it may be that perhaps the powerful effects of the newest medicine, or the oldest, emerge only within the embrace of relationships and in one's own distinct chemical climate, best created by hope, optimism, trust, and acceptance. There could be a whole sermon series, which I'm going to be presenting today. No, that's not true. Just on the emerging branches of integrative mind-body techniques, such as the power of writing, the impact of mindfulness training, the benefits of meditation, the persistent pull of old trauma and adversity. But the doors and windows for today include placebo, the sugar pill condition in medical research, and its dark sibling, nocebo, along with adherence to therapies. And finally, a bit of speculation to finish up today on mind's house in the material world and how mind may perhaps itself reach outside. So, the placebo condition. It is the inactive and presumably unhelpful, useless branch of the research study. Placebo comes from the word for pleasing. In research, it's the group of people who are pleased to receive treatment, but unknown to them, are assigned to receive the sugar pill, not the wonderful new potion, which will be marketed for billions of dollars of profit. And then the placebo effect. That's what happens to those folks in research who get the useless pill. On average, what happens? Quite a bit, it turns out. A whole lot more than nothing at all. In studies of those with mild to moderate depression, those in the placebo branch, typically counseling, education, non-medication stuff, do about as well as those receiving the spiffiest new antidepressant medication. In general, placebo conditions, in other words, inactive treatment in the context of hope, being pleased to receive that treatment, produced about a 30% improvement across the board in just about any condition you're looking at. This, then, is the placebo effect. And again, it arises not from an active medicine or intervention, but rather from the expectations, hopes, trust, relationships, rituals, and efforts exerted in one's pursuit of healing. Now, for me, it's clear that if your kidneys are shutting down, you have infection running through your bloodstream, you're hemorrhaging, or your blood sugar has skyrocketed or plummeted, you probably don't just want the placebo branch. However, even in the most severe crisis of health, virtually all of us can likely recall when we relied upon and trusted our nursing care or had a surgeon who was humane and gave us extra hope and confidence, or found a path out of medical crisis with guides and, thank goodness, some sacred moments. These also are experiences that capture the placebo effect, the pleasing home of healing connection and meaningful inner life despite illness. This placebo effect has been termed remembered health, where suffering steps aside so that the healthy core and constituents of the person are activated. My Madison colleagues, Dave Rakel and Bruce Barrett, found that caregivers' empathic listening and warm attentiveness during office visits shortened the length and reduced the intensity of symptoms in the common cold. Diverse other research has found that depression and social support can have opposite and strong effects upon immune function. But what I've been impressed with is in the past decade, research has identified via fancy scans, positron emission tomography, functional magnetic resonance imaging, diverse brain areas and circuits that are affected strongly by placebo. These are pathways that include those of endorphins, cannabinoids, cholecystokinin, prostaglandin, and dopamine in the brain as well as in the spinal cord. So it's just placebo, but folks, that matrix, that engagement, that psychological state has profound and subtle effects. Research on Parkinson's disease, strangely current with this week's message of despair and affliction, has been treated by surgical therapy, which has allowed observation of placebo effects at the level of individual cells. And it's found, at least for this clinical problem, that placebo responses trigger the same mechanisms and some of the same benefits as clinical drugs that are administered. And the cardiologist, Brian Olshansky, states that in his field, placebo effects improve outcomes with serious cardiac problems such as disability, syncope and falls, heart failure, atrial fibrillation, angina, and last but not least, survival. So are people deceived or fooled? Are they treated as ignorant in this placebo connection? Well, not so much in the age of research protocols where everybody needs to know they may get the active drug or the placebo and informed consent. But you know what? The notion of being fooled, is it the wonderful drug or is it just a sugar pill, assumes that in the real world there are real interventions or there is just sort of delusion and rating scale changes. The remarkable data I mentioned about the power and the effects of placebo really suggest that emotions and expectations are always constructing the real world of our illness and helping construct the real world of our healing. It's dangerous for us or our healthcare teams to forget or demean the power of placebo to help us revive our real world of well-being. Now, you okay with that, Sombar? Placebo? Yeah, okay. Here it is. You may remember an example of Jerome Frank's idea about healing and the placebo effect. When I tell you that I've been cooking for quite a while, I'm an expert. I watch the Food Channel. And I ordered from people who are very expert and know what they're talking about, a magic rock, which will make the best soup in the world. We'll have enough for all of us today if we just bring the most hard-earned, carefully sought, and meticulously prepared stuff we could contribute to the soup, which actually is relying on the rock and the soup pot. And we're going to give some of this soup to the homeless shelter. So I'm just going to ask a couple of you, well, no, wait. If we do this, who's going to bring some vegetables for the soup with the magic rock? Huh? Who's going to bring them? No one. I'm sorry, we're going to have a social justice program approved for this? If you brought something, what would you bring? Carrots. Potatoes. What else? Onions. What was that, please? Rutabaga. Peas. Okay, good. Do you think the soup's going to be pretty darn good? Do you think it could be some of the best soup you ever had? And you're working as a community to make it happen, right? And if you were naive, none of us have ever been fooled online, right, by scams, or had our identity stolen. You believe in this rock, and the rock allows you to join with the community, to get enthused about telling me about vegetables you're going to offer, and it's going to be a pretty good soup. Actually, when you do all that, you're going to get to the soup, and you can say, hey, with a little salt, it's pretty darn good. So, the rock is our stand-in for placebo. And the rituals I walked you through, the meaning, the enthusiasm, thinking differently about it, how are you going to contribute, what are you going to sacrifice for this healthy benefit, that's the stuff that Dr. Frank found cross-culturally, whether it was Amazon rainforest healing or fundamentalist Christian faith groups. Now, recent research has looked extensively at the opposite of the placebo effect. This dark sibling is the nocebo effect. Nocebo is the basis from the root noxious, not pleasing. In research studies, big data crunching, this manifests as the diverse side effects among those receiving the sugar pills, where they have all kinds of horrible things happening. The sugar pill, it did horrible things to me, and I got to quit that study. That's the opposite of the placebo effect, where we get healing from our hopes. We also can get distress from our expectations. These can occur when we hear of friends or family members' unpleasant reactions or side effects of treatment, or when we are told of, or how we are told of difficult healthcare options, or even what we have learned to fear in healthcare from our past experiences. The anesthesiologist did research. I love it when people do research that proves the profundity and simplicity of basic wisdom. They did research that found that how you describe an invasive procedure as, you know, either in gentle and reassuring words, or this is actually the worst part. It'll just feel kind of like a bee sting. So they found that gentle and reassuring words led to much less visceral reaction to the procedure and much less pain. So nocebo regulates circuits too, the opposite direction that placebo does. And actually, a recent study found that looking at pain sensations, they found that the nocebo influences cells at the level of the spinal cord, in terms of turning on more pain and distress. So, expectancy is powerful, both patients and probably our caregivers. And now there's better evidence how such influences are always entwined with medical care. They're especially important when they're in the midst of a dark, when we're in the midst of a dark wood of uncertainty and imperfect options where we are not sure how to go. There, more than anywhere else, we need the power of relationship, the recall of health, the morale, and the support. I was thinking, too, that what does the placebo effect have with why you're here today? I figure some of you came here already under the placebo effect because you had favorable expectations of the fellowship community, which likely drew upon your deep memories, and that you recalled moments, Sundays, rituals, decades, and meaningful experiences here. You came with hope, positive expectations, a sense of connection, and a memory of healing ritual. The placebo scientist Fabrizio Benedetti has done work starting to connect more closely these relationship qualities, including empathy and warmth, with these nervous system placebo effects. I was pumped when I read the title of one of his recent articles, Placebo-Induced Improvements, How Therapeutic Rituals Affect the Patient's Brain. There's one more fingerprint of these components of healing in the medical research. As one might expect, in research where people were faithful, adherent is the technical word, to the healing medicine, they took it more faithfully, with more trust, with more adherence, they gained the greatest benefit. However, greater adherence to taking one's placebo also has been shown to be remarkably beneficial. A recent analysis, 2006, I think, of 21 medication studies with over 46,000 patients with diverse problems including recent heart attacks, HIV infection, cardiac risk factors, diabetes, or recent heart transplantation. They put this all together and they found that the people who were adherent, in other words, they took more than 80% of those sugar pills, they had half the death rate of the people who weren't adherent to placebo. Now they said, well, just maybe, you know, if you're taking sugar pills faithfully, not being sure they're sugar pills, maybe that means you do a bunch of other things faithfully too. They've tried to control for that and it doesn't explain it away. So ultimately, we aren't sure about this, but the adherence effect, there's, if you do a search in PubMed, there's a lot of recent stuff that keeps finding this again and again and again. So at any rate, I think it's kind of phenomenal. So adherence, though, is not an argument for passive compliance, because they found that people who adhered to harmful medicines, guess what happened to their death rate? So you know what? You still need to know the healing path and guidance to stay on it. So this is not passive compliance, but an affirmation of participatory quality relationships in our healthcare. My assumption for some time has been that even the most well-proven medication may have, on average, a healing effect, but results may vary. So we've moved from Dr. Frank's study of cross-cultural healing into biochemical matters. I want to finish with one more provocative jump. Placebos and nocebos have these nice substantial effects that help or hinder healing. But when we enter another realm, that of remarkable coincidences, powerful dreams, energy healing, visitations, paranormal matters, well, you know, any of those mysteries at the edge of medicine and material reality, then it's kind of difficult to discern guideposts. However, Dr. Frank, in his book, makes an observation about this domain just beyond the edge of current evidence. He says, one cannot rule out the possibility, indeed, the evidence for it is quite persuasive, that some healers serve as a kind of conduit for a healing force in the universe, often called the life force, that, for want of a better term, must be called supernatural. That is, it cannot be conceptually incorporated into Western scientific thinking. Many then reject the notion out of hand on this account. I prefer to keep an open mind. One of these guideposts out there in that frontier area is recent research by Dr. Dean Radin and his team at the Institute for Noetic Sciences, published in the journal Physics Essays in 2012. I am not a physicist, nor can I judge the quality of such technical research. I do know that, like any shaggy beast of a study, it needs replication by others. To Dr. Radin's credit, his article includes 6 separate experiments by his team. His line of research was based on the quantum physics conclusion that objects at the quantum level appear to behave differently when observed than when unobserved. So I thought, trees falling in the forest. You watch and they fall over. I wonder if when you're not there, the tree still falls when nobody's there, but it will pirouette and do a somersault before landing. And we might never know. We couldn't know, because as soon as we looked, oh, pardon me, I'm falling. So Dr. Radin made use of the double-slit physics experiment. Who's enough of a physics geek to know what that is? Hear, hear. Thank you. I'll give you the citation for his funky stuff if you need it. At the level of quantum phenomena, light is both a particle, the photon, yet also a wave, and may have different degrees of tendency toward particleness or waveness. The double slit experiment catches this dance and provides a measure of particle or wave qualities. And Dr. Radin thought it might respond to very, very subtle forms of observation. When particles go through a narrow slit in a barrier and hit a recording screen, they will form a vertical bar. When waves go through that narrow slit, the bar still shows up, but now there is blurring off to the sides because instead of paintballs hitting the screen, you have a wave that spreads out across the screen. If light is just particles and one shines it through two narrow slits, It's akin to firing paintballs through the slits at a screen, and there will be two distinct bars of paintballs on the screen. But if light is waves instead of paintballs, it will spread widely across the screen, still with two bars behind the slits, but now with a set of bars all the way across that screen, those points being when the waves added to each other and boom, you had brightness, or when they canceled out and nothing shows up. The bars across the screen are where the two different sets of waves add to each other. The blank is when they cancel out. Their research simply looked at a ratio number that measured waveness or particleness. And that was the number they were trying to affect. He did much research to ensure that there was stability in particle or wave observations when nothing was occurring. His intervention was not an instrument or radiation, data recorder, or tweaking a laser. It was trained meditators who cleared their consciousness via meditation or else focused attention on that optical system, thereby observing it at a distance. Radin's team found with remarkable statistical unusualness, p less than 10 to the 10th, I think, minus 10th, that the ratio moved from wave-like to particle-like when the meditators changed their cognitive focus from quiet to mental attention. And indeed, meditation experience, EEG, concentration, and psychological qualities predicted how much that shift would occur. So, this is just one line of research on the edge of scientific thinking, but you know what? There may well be changes of scientific paradigms not so far in the future. Just as traditional physics gave way late in the 19th century to wondrous contemporary theory, technology, and equipment. Now that we are seeing better how relationships, hope, expectancy, faithfulness, and trust, or their absence, can greatly impact multiple core brain circuits and the trajectory of illness, then I have to start to wonder whether quantum connections could also respond to similar inputs, even at a distance, maybe not even via physical or chemical means. But nonetheless, connecting via heart, mind, synapses, maybe even crucial atoms. However, we'll wrap up with the words of that philosopher and scholar Iris Dement. No one knows for certain, so it's all the same to me. I think I'll just let the mystery be. Thank you.